Tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks, Ali, and welcome back to Tip Today. Now, businesses across the county will get tips on securing their premises and indeed financial security over the festive season. Senior Gardaí, including Superintendent William Leahy, will be giving advice at an event at the Moyle Rovers Centre in Monroe this evening. It's being organised by County Tipperary Chamber, and the CEO is Dave Shanahan, who joins me in studio. Now, good morning to you, Dave.
And good morning, Fran.
Thanks for coming in to us. Security, of course, is vital to businesses, isn't it?
Vital this time of year. A lot of businesses are carrying a lot of cash, I suppose, pubs and retail in particular. I know there's a lot more card transactions, but there's still a lot of cash flying around and checks and whatever else would be. So, and people are carrying a lot of stock. So, you know, people like petrol stations and that would be carrying a lot more cigarettes than they normally carry, and off-license would be carrying more drink, etc., etc. So it's very, very important for people to, you know, focus on security this time of year. Obviously, there's shoplifting and stuff as well. I think a lot of guys have a good handle on that. You know, they kind of have a routine there.
How big an issue is that, Dave?
I don't hear people talking much about it. It's kind of a bogey subject in that I don't think retailers like to admit that it's happening. You know what I mean? But it does happen more at Christmas, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it does, you know, it is a cost of business as well, you know what I mean? But most places now have that under control.
Right.
They have security people and they have camera systems and, you know, they know kind of the, you know, the usual suspects, I suppose you might call them, you know what I mean?
So securing the premises themselves, I presume that's going to come up as well.
Yeah, securing the premises is going to come up this evening. I mean, the most important thing, I suppose, for any business really is that, you know, that their locks are in good shape, that they, you know, the locks can't be rifled, that they're like ABS locks and stuff like that. You know, there's magnetic locks that basically when you put your key in, there's a magnet inside and one thing, the key, you know, connects up with the lock inside, but you can't actually rifle it. Now, I'd have it in my own house, and I deal with MD Locks, they're a member of the chamber as well, and they're very good for locks and safes and any kind of security. The other thing is, I suppose, outside lights. People are always talking about it. Anybody intruding on your premises usually hates to see any kind of light or to be lit up in any situation. So in my experience, the best lights to have are kind of permanent halogen lights. You can buy them through, you know, through reputable electricians and security people like Hall Alarms and people, and basically these lights will go up and they're there for about 7 years, so the bulb never goes in them.
Right.
So you go away for your weekend and you can put sensors on, and then somebody comes into your yard or in the front of your house, and they go
they're
on,
lit
they
up.
Go on,
yeah,
like, you know, 500 watts, right? And the, you know, the people who are trying to break into your house or your premises don't really like that. And I suppose the real thing then after all that is alarms, to be, you know, have a proper alarm system on your premises. You know, PIRs is great, but I mean, obviously sensors on windows and doors is very important as well. And obviously at the back of all that is to have monitored security, because there's no point in having all the security in the world and the alarm goes off and nobody ever does anything about it, because these guys are watching that as well, you know what I mean? And I'd say, I suppose, the other thing is to say to people who are in businesses where, you know, there's a lot of cash going on, that they shouldn't bring the cash back home to their houses or be travelling with lots of cash, because if any of that information gets out for any reason, and it's usually quite accidental, this information gets out, the people themselves can become a target. Now, it wouldn't be probably as bad down here as it would be in Dublin, but I know people, you know, in retail in Dublin that have been followed home and all kinds of stuff, you know what I mean? Because it's known that they're, you know, carrying cash. Now, they're not doing it as much years ago. They're doing a lot of the Brinksmat stuff. And
I know
Charlie Chalk now down the years, and the poor man had lost his leg. And
terrible.
I know lots of publicans. He used to be carrying the whole all to the bank, and there'd be two guys, you know, doing the night save at 2 o'clock in the morning, and all this kind of mad stuff we used to do.
People
are not doing it now.
And
hopefully there's no one left doing it.
So too.
Know?
I presume everybody's welcome along to this meeting.
All business people are welcome in the area. As I say, Sergeant Tom O'Dwyer will be there, Willie Lahey will be there, and Kieran O'Regan is going to be there as well. And the whole idea is to get, I suppose, a forum together, one for the guards to give, you know, an update on security to the business people in the local community here. And it's also Q&A, it's also people to ask questions about this, that and the other. And obviously it's networking, because people can inform each other, like, you know, well, I'm doing this and you doing that, and I found that worked for me, that kind of conversation. It's like any general business meeting or networking meeting.
You're very up to speed on this yourself. You're obviously very security conscious, aren't you?
Well, I have a good bit of security in the house, I worked in a firm before where we hosted a lot of servers that would be have a lot of sensitive information on them. I won't go into company names and stuff, but basically the building I was in was holding about, you know, 2.5 million customer bits of information on servers, doing daily transactions, plus there was servers there for, you know, major league websites as well. Right. So the security on the building would have been very high, and we would have had, you know, 2 security audits every year. So cameras, sensors on locks, sensors on windows. They even had security on the roof, right?
Wow.
It was that kind of
so it's no setup. No wonder you're so security conscious.
So my boss in the last job was the head of security, and you can't help but pick up things, you know, whenever, you know.
Of course. Tell me about, because you've got some other interesting stuff going on where Chambers is concerned as well. You're going to try and look after people where the bus is concerned.
Ourselves in the council and the shopkeepers in the town of Clonmel basically had this idea over the last number of weeks that it would be nice to run a bus from the poppy fields down into the centre of the town and then carry on to the showgrounds, and obviously the reverse route as well. So we're publicising it on social media at the moment. John Donoghue is running the bus. And the bus is a 28-seater, and basically it's a free bus every Friday and Saturday from here to Christmas. Idea is to, I suppose, there have been talks about doing park and ride stuff, but I don't think that's for now, you know what I mean? I think eventually it may be something that may come into play, because a lot of other big towns and cities would have a situation where particularly people from outside Clonmel coming in maybe could park their car somewhere, then get the bus, then go to the various different places, do their shopping with ease, do you know what I mean? And hopefully it's good for everybody, you know.
Nice idea, indeed.
And say, it's in conjunction with the council.
Is that running right up until almost Christmas Eve?
It's running until the Friday and 23rd, Saturday before Christmas, I mean, Christmas Eve with hot might be a bit too hectic to be running buses at that stage.
Just a little, I would imagine. You've got your window display competition.
Yeah, we've
a
window display competition, County Tipperary SkillNet, which is, you know, part and parcel of the County Tipperary Chamber and in the same office. We were talking to Emer King. Emer King does a lot of the work on clonmel.ie and a lot of, she's done all the graphics there, as you can see. And so we just all put our heads together and said, wouldn't it be nice if there was a competition in Clonmel for the best window display? So we threw a couple hundred euro into it, and then I talked to the directors and the president, and we said we'd throw in a free chamber membership to spice it up a little bit, you know. But it's just, you know, once there's a competition there, you do notice that people start to do their shop windows up, and, you know, it does spruce the place up.
Of course,
you know
it is. And all boats are lifted by it, I suppose, into the bargain. What's 2017? It's a little soon to look back, maybe. But was it a good year for business?
I think it was a good year for business in general. I mean, there's obviously different sectors, you know what I mean? Obviously, the people in the agri-food sector, especially the exporters, are looking at Brexit, and we won't go into that yet. But I mean, I'm just saying that they're looking at what's going on across the water as being a big impactor on exporting. Local agri-food, I suppose, I think is doing well from what I can see. Obviously, the big farmers are tipping away, doing well. They all seem to be training people, taking on people. There seems to be a lot of employment. I don't see a whole pile of unemployment at the moment. There's a lot of people upskilling. There's a lot of people, you know, getting into jobs after years of not having jobs. And there's a lot of people like the Education Training Board and County Tipperary Skillnet and, you know, Leo and various other bodies that are helping people upskill and get trained, you know, to get into these jobs that are being created now. I'd say particularly retail are finding it hard to get people now. So the people I know in hotels and bars and in general retail are finding it hard to get people now, because I suppose a lot of those people have moved into maybe higher skill jobs in some cases.
Of course.
And that's kind of what happened in the boom in the early 2000s, that, I mean, you know, the guy who's working in a bar is suddenly working in an IT firm, you know, might have been able to get the same job 5 years beforehand.
It's incredible the way it works and the way it's cyclical as well. Mm. I was talking to DJ Butler in Dundrum in the Village supermarket today, and he was saying, yeah, it's good. He sees a bit of growth there. Well, people are still looking for the bargain. They're careful about what they buy. They're spending a bit extra, but they want to make sure they're getting value for money.
Well, the thing, especially with retailers, I suppose what's hitting them is online purchasing.
Yeah.
Now, there was a statistic came out there the other day that 75% of online purchasing comes from outside the state, and only 25% of what we're buying online is actually sourced in Ireland, right? So we're putting a big drive on now. We're kind of Three Hearts campaign to, you know, to shop local, to source local, and to eat local. You know what I mean? I know online is very easy on your computer or your iPad or whatever it would be, and it takes the pain out of going to the shop, or it might be a rainy day or something like that. But, you know, if you're buying local, you know, in retail, whether it's, you know, a restaurant, you know, a shop or whatever, you're supporting local jobs. It's as simple as that, right? So, and it's an all year round thing, really. It's not just for Christmas. So I would suggest to people that they, you know, look locally first before they buy anything. You know, take that trouble to go down to the shop, you know, if they want to buy their pair of shoes or buy their suit or, in the ladies' case, buy, you know, some nice clothes for a night out or whatever else would be. You know, there are a lot of, you know, choices there if you go looking, you know what I mean?
And it's vital to the local economy.
And it's vital. There's no point in saying, like, you know, why did such and such a shop close down?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Now, we were talking about that on the programme recently. You know, we always whinge about losing the local supermarket in a village or the local postal office or whatever.
Yeah.
But if we don't use it, you know.
That is a major problem. I mean, the post offices, they've spent years trying to develop extra services in the post offices, and I used to work for Impost, and the division that was, you know, maintaining what was going on in the post offices from a, you know, technology point of view. And the biggest problem was that there was postmasters retiring. The wages they were on were very low, and there was no one there to replace them. And one thing Zonpost started doing then was putting post point machines into shops that could do a lot of the services that the post office would do, which is probably longer term a better idea. You know what I mean?
Some people might disagree with
that. Well, it's hard to know. Yeah. It's hard to know. Yeah. But it's just, that, as you said, that you've got to have the throughput on things, whether it's a hospital A&E ward or a shop or a post office. You know, there's a certain, you know, limit below which the place is not making any money.
Just can't exist
anymore.
So will you have a quick word with me about Brexit? Yeah. Because you mentioned it in passing there, and I suppose it's the great unknown in a lot of ways. We thought things were going to go well for us yesterday, scuppered, I suppose, by the DUP, or maybe some awful diplomacy on the part of Theresa May. What do you make of it now?
Well, I, you know, my brother and I works in City London, and he does a lot of lecturing on different subjects, and Brexit is one of them. And he recently came over for an AIB conference there in the Horse and Jockey, and people thought he was quite a good speaker. But his take on it really is that we are heading for the hard Brexit, that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, that between the Labour Party and the Conservative Party in England, there's neither of them have a majority for having another vote on being in Europe or no. They don't seem to know what they want, right? And anybody who puts their head above the parapet and says, oh, I have a solution, as we saw yesterday, within a couple of hours gets shot down. So, I mean, it seems like the civil servants, both on the Irish and British side and the European side, had the bones of an agreement yesterday morning, And by about 3 o'clock, the whole thing fizzled out. You know what I mean? And
again, because politics got involved.
Well, because, you know, the DUP got involved.
The tail was wagging the dog.
We have
our
few votes and we're propping up the government and we're not going to have this and we're not going to have that. Now, I mean, in 6 months' time, if Jeremy Corbyn is the Prime Minister in England, there won't be any tail wagging the dog because there'll be no one talking to the DUP anymore. And maybe this won't be the case. But it's very volatile. And I suppose from an EU point of view, when they're now negotiating with something, they're kind of saying, well, will Theresa may be there next week? Who will we be dealing with next? I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg is the favourite to be the next Conservative leader, and the guy didn't even know anything about the Irish Taoiseach.
Which is incredible, isn't
he
it?
He thought, he didn't know the facts. Yeah. It was appalling that he didn't know the facts.
It's very interesting. But one of the things that surprises me is that the DUP, I mean, if you look at the makeup of the DUP, there's a lot of farming community within the DUP, for example.
And business people. Most of the business people in the North are from that background.
So you'd imagine that the grassroots of the DUP mightn't be all that interested.
Well, you would imagine that business people are usually pragmatic.
Yeah.
And the people who support the DUP in the North are usually very pragmatic people because Ian Paisley came in from the cold a number of years ago and no one thought he would do it.
Well, it took him a lot of years to be pragmatic, but
but he eventually got there, you know what I mean? And the point was they realised that there was a monetary solution in everything that would make sense. And maybe to solve the Northern situation, that there has to be a little bit of carrot there for the Northern Unionists from somebody to say, you know, this is the way things could work or things won't be that bad. But the one thing sure and certain is the people, you know, in the North, there's some very good business people up there. And I mean, I've met some of those people and they're saying, you know, they're saying that their politicians aren't representing them at this stage.
That's
and I mean, the majority of the people in the North voted to stay in the EU. So it's very, very mixed up political stuff. But my brother reckons we're going down to the wire, right? That the EU will ask us to put up a hard border because we will be the border of the single market, right? It won't be the British government putting it up, right? And then suddenly we find ourselves in a whole new reality. I mean, I was talking to a guy from Dundalk Chamber, and they would be right up against it, and he said the Irish government already have plans to build 11 border posts. But of course, there's been...
Well, they're in denial of it. I mean, denying that's...
Well, I was told that last week. So I'm very good authority.
That puts a whole other look on
so if people are making preparations to do that, right, with, I suppose, approximately 15 months to go, because it'll take time to build all these truck parks and whatever else would be to do your customs. I mean, you see from the, I don't know if I'm giving the stat sheet there, but like there's 6,000 vehicles going over the border every day. There's 30,000 people going over the border every day. That's huge. Like, incredible. You know what I mean?
Do you know, whenever we discuss this, the Paul Brady lyric comes to mind, witch doctors praying for a mighty showdown. No way this holy flag is going to fall, you know.
Yeah.
A couple of things. A caller was saying, why should Dave ask people to shop local? Besides, the caller says he talks about local jobs. Sure, if you're not related to somebody in the know, you won't get employment locally as well. Do you want to discuss that?
I don't think there's as much of that going on as used to be the case before. You know what I mean?
Because there are jobs, though. Is that what you're saying?
Well, look, some jobs, some people, you know, around here, around Tipperary, do get jobs because they know people. There's no doubt about that. But a lot of major firms and the likes of the county council and public bodies have very, very strict rules now as regards, who they employ and who they don't employ. And actually saying, you know, somebody in a lot of cases is probably the worst thing you can say.
Right, because there was a time when, like, the local politician might be able to influence something.
Those things happen too. But probably wasn't, you know, if we're trying to get away from past corruption and get into transparency, it's probably not a good thing. Now, I mean, I know, I'm not saying these things don't go on, but there's not as much of it going on. There's nothing like as much of it going on as used to go on before.
Another caller says, went into a yard one time and an automated voice shouted over the intercom, get out or I will, whatever. I thought it was brilliant. That is a form of security now, isn't it, where you have a live voice coming on a tannoy.
Yeah, that's coming in too, and there's different things. I think I saw on the television, there's this thing where they actually have smoke machines inside in premises, you know, like someone sets the alarm off, maybe sets a second trigger off and the alarm goes off and then the place fills with smoke. and the guy who's in to do the bad business, whatever, can't see anything.
Right.
And they actually run out of the place then. Torches are no use to them. It's like they were in the worst fog of all time. So there's various different things going on now. But there is an American company now, and they have this thing where, you can actually go from your iPhone and see what's happening in your house and actually say to the guy, you know, there's CCTV,
you're being watched,
you know, there's alarms here.
I would imagine
we have you.
And that's very effective. The big message, Dave, is go out and shop local, really.
Shop local, and as regards, use the bus, please, would be great for people. And as regards crime and security, this is not the time to be probably fixing your locks, your cameras, but you've got the rest of the year to do it, and it's an important all-around year to think
right.
to do.
And tonight, for advice then, in Monroe?
Yeah, tonight for advice. The guards will be there, and we'll be there from the chamber, and there'll be other business people there as well. And as I say, just even networking among business people to say, well, what do you do, and can I come down and see what you're doing? And
7 o'clock
tonight. All that kind of stuff.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP today. Now, the Cistercian College in Ross Grey is on the leading schools, one of the leading schools indeed, in the country. That's according to the latest league table. And I'm joined on the line now by Seamus Hennessy, who's Director of Admissions at the college. Good morning to you, Seamus.
Good morning, Fran, and good morning to your listeners.
And it's good to talk to you today. Congratulations to you, first of all, Seamus.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It is smiles all round for students, parents and staff alike at the college today, hearing the good news from the Irish Times this morning.
And had you any idea that this was going to be the case ahead of reading that this morning, Seamus?
Well, we've always had a very good innings with the league tables across the country since their introduction. And thank God this year, in spite of it being a very, very challenging calendar year, you know, it was no different. We've always held our place in the top 10 to 15 schools across the country. And of course, it's based on the quantity of students that go on and proceed to third level. But nearly all of our students, in fact, all in most years, progressing to third level, if not doing repeat somewhere or taking a gap year to do some work abroad. So we're always high up there and in the table network. But again, we really welcome it this year, as it was a very challenging year, as all your listeners know, around Tipperary for the college. And as we got back on a very strong foothold at the beginning of this academic year, this is just another great string to the bow of the college this year.
Well, if you ever needed acknowledgement on how well the school is doing, and indeed how important the school is, I mean, this is it, isn't it?
Absolutely. Just in endorses it. And I suppose all of that goes back to the very, very unique recipe and the holistic education that we pride ourselves on here. You know, a good mix of sport, music as co-curricular and extracurricular activity, with of course academics being one of the main tenets of the school.
I see that UCD is the university of choice for the majority. Is that fair to say?
It's significant numbers will gravitate to UCD. I suppose the capital invariably attracts a higher proportion of students from all schools in the country, but with substantial numbers attending other universities. For instance, some of the rugby players that we would have would go on to play for Connacht, would enrol in UCG, and those in the Munster Academy would present themselves at the University of Limerick, just down the road from us too, as well as attending universities across the world too that might not even be included in the league tables, with some of our past students doing pharmacy and physiotherapy in places like Budapest, Edinburgh and Holland itself.
And just looking at the numbers you had sitting there, Leaving Cert, was that 31, was it?
31 students present for Leaving Cert.
What are you hoping for in terms of numbers for next year, Seamus?
Well, our numbers are in the mid-30s this year, and as you know, we were delighted to announce on TIP FM some weeks ago that we've stabilised numbers in the school and expect figures to grow in the next academic year. We had a very, very successful introductory weekend in early October, and we'll have another open day in mid-February, which to be announced later on. We also have a good number of students after coming in October and deciding for taking a place, that there's another community out there that yet haven't made up their mind. So I'm very happy to say that the new offering presented by the college of the regular 7-day boarding plus 5-day boarding, and the new arrival of day boarders this year, has really put a spring in the step of life in the college and is contributing in no small way to securing our future well into another 100 years of education at Ross Grey.
Is it bringing a different dynamic to the college as well, Seamus?
The wonderful thing about it is the dynamic that's in existence here for well over 100 years continues to be alive, and the new arrival of day boarders just join the one college community. It's great that we are and continue to be one community of learning, of sport, of music, and following that Cistercian ethos of which we're so proud of here, that continues to help our school to grow.
Well, it's fantastic. We couldn't believe the outpouring of support for the school when things got a little rocky there for you. I mean, there's a huge amount of support, you know, from past pupils and indeed from people who never had anything to do with the school except to know it was in the locality.
It was very humbling for us back in March. When we look back, it seems like a lifetime ago now, because so much has happened since then, and so much goodwill. And as you say, an outpouring of support from the local community, the regional community, and the national and international community. You know, it made us feel, wow, education is important to the people of Ireland. This type of education is important to the people of Ireland, and this unique Cistercian education and Ross Gray and Cistercian College is so important. And I suppose people appreciate the work that all of the staff do on a daily basis, not throughout the academic year, but throughout the calendar year and every year, to present a campus of this kind, a community of learning and a community of faith too, and people that represent this college, this county and this province in every aspect of life the world over.
Well, listen, would you pass on our congratulations to everybody involved, and good to talk to you today, Seamus.
And thank you, and good morning to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much indeed, and bye-bye to you. 1800 938 007. You can text on 083 311 3311. As ever, we'd be delighted to hear from you, and we have those wonderful prizes as well where that is concerned. All right then, I think we're going back to the phone lines, Rudy, are we? And we're going to Chrissy, who's online with us. Chrissy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fern. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Chrissy, you wanted to join in our conversations.
I just want to make a comment, but I'm no expert on the subject. But anyway, I was about Brexit and about the North not wanting to join the UK going solo.
Yes.
That they wanted to stay in the European.
Well, certainly some aspects of Northern Ireland. I'm not sure about the DUP and how they believe about it, but some aspects. But what's your thoughts on it, Chris?
My thoughts was, wouldn't it be an excellent opportunity for a united Ireland, for Dublin to put out a hand of welcome to the North and invite him to join the South?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people would certainly agree with you where that is concerned, but you'd have a big argument from the DUP and everybody involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I'm sure Sinn Féin would be absolutely thrilled with that notion.
Yeah. It just came to my mind there. I'm no expert on the subject, but you're better up to meeting that than me. But I was just thinking, you know, if they want to stay, they have much of a choice, like.
And would you like to see a United Ireland, Chrissy?
I'd love to, yeah.
Would
I
you?
I would, yeah. And I would, naturally.
And why is that? Is that...
Well, I mean, Ireland is Ireland. And why should we, 16 counties above in the north, part of, you know, part of the UK...
Right, so you'd actually like to see a full 32-county Ireland, yeah?
I would, of course, yeah, I would.
Right.
I would.
I find that there's an awful lot of young people out there now, Chrissy, who couldn't give a hoot about that they're not interested in that anymore, yeah?
Yeah, but, I mean, they're not, nowadays, they're not educated much. I don't know, now I can't speak about that, talking my subject of education, but... I wouldn't think that they would know too much about it, you know?
Yeah, and you think that's, you know, that's a pity, I suppose, in some ways, is it?
I think it is, that history of our country should be better publicised and learned at school and all the rest of it, you know?
Well, I mean, you're very much right in a way that some of the commentators are saying that Brexit certainly brings the possibility of a united Ireland a generation earlier than it might happen, you know?
Yeah.
So it certainly is a possibility, and you'd like to see it happen anyway.
I'd love to see it happen, Fran. I could be right and I could be wrong. You know, it just occurred to me to give you a ring, because we're hearing so much about it and they can't come to terms and all the rest of it. And I was saying to myself, this is a big chance now for the overall to put out a hand of welcome and say welcome in. Coming to United Ireland.
You know, they say a week is a long time in politics, Chrissy. And, you know, I don't make predictions anymore because you never know. You never know.
I know, sure. I know you don't. No, you don't. Listen, and what would you think yourself about it?
What would I think about? Do you mean about a 32 county Ireland?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, it depends on whether or not that it could happen, I suppose, without bloodshed. And it would have to happen, I suppose, with the majority of the people in the north wanting it to happen.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know, and I mean, if the majority of people up there wanted it to happen for financial reasons or for historical reasons or cultural reasons or whatever, I certainly won't be objecting down in Anacharty anyway. That's for sure, Chrissy.
No, but because, I mean, look at the trade that's going on between the north and the south and all the rest of it. You had on there a while ago the amount of people that were crossing over every day going into the north and coming out and all the rest of it. I mean, for heaven's sake... We should have a United Ireland in my books.
Well, I remember the days of when you had to go through the checkpoints up there and how scary and frightening it was, and I would hate for it to go back to that again, you know?
To that again, yeah. But you see, if we're all 32 County Ireland, I mean, if we're trading with them, I mean, you know, if we're trading with them, come on and join us, that's it.
Yeah. Well, listen, you make a very good point. It's lovely to talk to you, Chrissy, and I hope all is well with you.
Yes, Fran, I'm not too bad at all.
All right.
A bit trouble with my back, but far from that, I'm okay.
Well, at least you're keeping up to speed with everything that's happening out there anyway, which is the main thing.
Well, I was listening to your show anyway. I was listening in the morning there.
Oh, do you? Aren't you a pure dote? Listen, lovely to talk to you, Chrissy. Thank you.
Sure. We know each other for years.
We work together. We know each other a long time, Chrissy, and I had the pleasure of working with you for many years indeed. All right, yes. Look after yourself, dude. Bye-bye, Gina.
All the best.
Bye-bye. That's Chrissy speaking to us today.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
This Friday, festive shoppers in Shannon can also embark on a bit of soul saving. The Bishop of Killaloe, Fintan Monaghan, is set to take part in the third annual Mercy on the Mall, where 20 priests make themselves available to shoppers and people in the Sky Court shopping centre who would like to avail of the opportunity for confession, a chat or a blessing. It's the brainchild of the parish priest of Shannon, Father Tom Ryan, who joins me online now. Good morning to you, Father.
Good morning.
And it's very good to talk to you today. Where did the idea initially come from, Father?
Well, 2 years ago, in 2015, we had the beginning of the Year of Mercy, in which Pope Francis and the priest go out to the marketplace and speak to people, connect with people, engage with people. So as a response to that appeal, our initiative in Shannon was to go to our shopping centre, which is our town centre in Shannon, with 60 shops and businesses, and to make ourselves available to people. So with the support of management, we started 2 years ago, and it has been a great success on every occasion since.
It strikes me on reading some of the information on it, Father, that it was a bigger success than you even thought it was going to be.
Well, it hadn't been tried before, so we didn't know what response we could get. It might have been a disaster, but to our present surprise, the way I meant it, if it was of support to one person, then the initiative would have been worthwhile. As it turned out, each year that we had this initiative on between 1 and 6 o'clock, that the priest makes themselves available, and all have been kept busy and engaged with people in that time. There's been no time for idleness on behalf of the priest. And the response from people has been very positive. One woman described it as liberating. She hadn't availed of the sacrament in 5 years. Another said it was a new beginning for her. So these are just examples that we take as the success has been successful.
And some of the people that you're meeting, Father, have they been isolated from the church for some years and maybe using this as an opportunity to, I don't know, to have a look at their lives again, maybe?
Exactly. Some people might have stumbled in the shopping centre that day, weren't aware we were there, and curiosity brought them to our table. We have tables just around the shopping centre, two chairs. The bishop or the priest will sit in one, and the other is for a person who wants to sit down and have a chat. Others would have known we were there, and they travelled to I know some people from North Tipperary came the first year and used an opportunity to do their shopping and to have confession for Christmas. It's also an opportunity to avoid in queues, maybe, in their local churches or in the cities where they might avail of Christmas confession.
What are you finding out there, Father? Because I know that from the programme over the last few years, we're finding a lot of isolation, a lot of loneliness, and people will take any opportunity, really, to have a chat or to connect with another human being.
Yes, that is so true, Fran. But in this context, I suppose, they're connecting with the church. Some may have disconnected in recent years. Others may be regularly connected. And others would see it as an opportunity to a new beginning, to begin again. And others would see it maybe as an opportunity to offload issues that were on their life and maybe seek forgiveness and get the chance to begin again.
The notion of confession went sort of out of fashion, if you don't mind my saying so, largely. But do you find that people feel a sense of a new beginning following a confession? The lady you told me about described it as liberating in some way, taking a weight off of shoulders.
Yeah, they were her words, was liberating experience. And she said publicly in an interview afterwards, it had been 25 years since she availed of the sacrament. And she did feel it liberating, which would have been the weight off her shoulders, which meant she was carrying that weight over those years. And she used that opportunity to unload. And see, the sacrament of confession, while you're right, it isn't used as much as it was in the past, is one of the great gifts of God, because it gives us forgiveness, total, absolute, and unconditional. And it gives the gift of new beginnings. And I can think of no two greater gifts coming up to Christmas than to have that peace of mind in your life and the chance to begin again, no matter what things are in your life, what you have done wrong, what you have failed to do, that you have the chance to begin again. And that's the great gift of God. Our God is the God of new beginnings. Every day you wake up in the morning, it's a new beginning.
Well, Father, it was really good to talk to you today. Sadly, the quality of your line isn't fantastic, but it was good of you to make time for us. And I presume if people from Tipperary want to make their way to Shannon on Friday, they won't be turned away because they're from Tipperary or anything.
Our diocese of Killaloe extends to all north of Tipperary and most of County Clare, the parish, Connell and Limerick, and South Offaly. And we're a welcoming community. And the real issue is that with the motorway, you know, Nina's just in 40 minutes. You bypass traffic in Limerick City. You have no traffic jam. You have free parking in our parking and shopping centre. You have 60 shops. And you have the opportunity for confession. And we also have a celebration shopping centre. So you get looked after for the next famine.
All right, Father. Really good to talk to you today. And thank you very much indeed. That is Father Tom Ryan, who is parish priest of Shannon. It sounds like a good idea, and I'm sure it's an attractive idea for many people as well. You wonder why other shopping areas or shopping malls, as they call them now, wouldn't follow suit with that, but there you go. Interesting take. And apologies for the quality of that line, but Father Tom is on retreat in Amsterdam, I'm told, at the moment, so that might account for the quality of the line there.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Mary is online with me. Good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning, friend. How are you?
I'm not so bad at all, Mary. You heard me speak to Father Tom about confession and it brought you back a memory?
It brought me back a very funny memory. I'll have to edit it because there was a bit of language used, friend. It's many years ago. My mother always said to me, God rest her, when I was young, that I was called after Our Lady of Knock.
Right.
And every single year, friend, I'd be lobbed on the bus and we'd be taken to Knock. But she was a flyer. She'd be racing around the place and you'd get off the bus in Knock and she'd say, now we'll go and get the holy medals, then we'll get the holy water, then we'll go to devotions, then we'll go to confessions. And it was immaterial whether you wanted to go or not, friend, you went.
I can't imagine.
You went whether you liked. You didn't have an opinion back then, like, sort of thing. Now, I'm in my late 60s, friend. I'm not talking yesterday or the day before. This is years ago. But anyway, as I said, I'll have to edit it. This was a woman that never cursed in her life, friend. If you drew down, we'll say, our Lord's name in vain, you'd be made sorry, mammy, and sorry, God, sort of thing. Language just wasn't done in our house. Now, I'm living in Limerick, but I originally come from Latra in the parish of Temple Derry.
Right.
So she said to me, anyway, right, Mary, we're going into confession. And at the time, she was nursing my father after a stroke, friend.
Mm.
or during that, straight away after a stroke. I mean, washing him, shaving him, bathing him, the whole shebang, feeding him, you know, changing beds, the whole thing. Now, we didn't have a car at home, friend, like, 'twas the bicycle or the S and car, basically.
Right.
Or you walk to mass, yeah, simple as that, like. So, she says to me, we're going into confession. So, she came out and we, like, a red rag to a bull with a face in her. And I said to her, how did you get on, mammy, in all the innocence? And she said, well, I can't say what she said, Fred, but she had to go back the second time. She used, well, it was, I can't say it obviously over the air, friend, but I fell around the place laughing, and I said to her, because I have a sense of humour like her anyway, and I said, mammy, I got on fine. Your man I got was very nice. Don't refer to him as your man. He's a priest. And then the litany came out again, friend. So basically, I never heard such a string of language in my life, and she wasn't praising him. Seemingly, he said to her, how long is it since your last confession? And she said something like 2 months, which wasn't a hanging offence. Like. Mm. So he said 2 months, and he sort of looked at her as much as to say, like, you know, you could make a bigger effort. And she delved into this big spiel, friend, about, you know, well, I'm sorry, Father, and we looked up to priests back then. You didn't go against them.
Yeah, you didn't question them or anything, yeah.
They were right and you were wrong, and that was it. You just didn't question religion back then when I was growing up. So she continued with the litany as I fell around in front of the Blessed Virgin laughing, God forgive me. But anyway, I said to her, rising her, you'll have to go back in again now, mammy, and do it all over again. But it even amuses me as I'm telling it, Fred, because she let such a litany out of her, and what brought that on her was he was disgusted to think that it was 2 months since her last confession, and in all her innocence, the poor misfortunate woman, God bless her, she said, Father, I'm so sorry it's so long. But she said, you see, I only have a bicycle, and I meant to come more often, she said, but I'm nursing my sick husband. He's after a stroke, and I'm literally doing everything for him, and we don't have any transport or anything in the house. So do you know what he says to her, Fred?
What did he say, Mary?
Aren't you a very selfish woman?
What?
He did, Fran. Now, that's the serious part of it, but it was the litany of language that came out of her. This is a woman, Fran, that if you said God or drew down our Lord's name in vain, I mean, you wouldn't get outside the door. You wouldn't get out dancing maybe for 3 weeks to Las Vegas.
So she was very offended by the priest, obviously.
I'd say she was very hurt and not so much offended, friend, but she came out with fire in her eyes. But was her expression and what came straight out of her mouth, I would kill to be able to say what she said, friend, but obviously not. I can.
We'll have to make up our own minds on it, Mary.
Well, it's sort of...
Did she call him a name?
No, friend. Let's just say it began... there was 2 words. The second one was him, and the first one began with F.
I think we have you now, Mary.
You get me, just Fred, yeah.
I definitely have you now, and he certainly was, if that was his attitude to her. My God, and the poor woman, all the work she was doing. Isn't it amazing? So we dragged you back back down memory lane anyway, Mary.
You dragged me back, I'd say, the best part of 50 years, Fran. I was highly amused when I now, no reflection on the lovely priest that was on with you, but the memory shot through me head, and I said to Trudy there, I was out driving, hands-free, I hastened to add, and I pulled into a garage in Castle Troy, when she said she'd ring me back, like, but I said, I'll have to share it, because that memory is as clear in me head. This was a woman, it was like the Pope offering you a cigarette, friend, back then.
She was such a good living woman, yeah.
She was a terribly good living woman, and she was plankers on the ass and car, would you believe, with the hay inside, going to, I don't know if you know Grinnestown, it wouldn't be, it would be near to me there, a friend.
Right,
We used to all be lobbed into the ass and car on Saturday morning, Sunday morning or whatever, and off to confession. And God forgive me for saying it, friend, but I'm sure people can relate to what I'm saying. the sins you'd have in a week when I was in my teens, Fran, were nil.
Oh, sure, I know.
So you had to practice the same sins that you said last week and the week before and the week before that. So it was always, I answered back me mother. I cursed twice. And it was like you wrote it down and you were reading it out, Fran. I mean, things have changed so much.
Weren't we very innocent, Mary? Weren't we very innocent indeed?
Fran, sure, we didn't know. I mean, God's sake, you know, we didn't know what a sin was. I mean, I was maybe a year and a half, 2 years younger than my older sister, and I literally used to have to grovel to get out dancing to Las Vegas in Templemore. I mean, the first time I told my 37-year-old son that I used to go to Las Vegas, he said, God, may you travelled in your youth.
Mary, I have to go, sadly, because I could talk to you all day. Listen, you look after yourself and go to confession now, won't you?
Of course I will, friend, and you too.
All right. Goodbye, Mary. Goodbye. Lovely to talk to Mary, who's in Castle Trident.